Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the magnificent Monday edition of the Yard. I hope you had a great weekend. We are less than 5 weeks away from Mississippi State playing football. And there's going to be a preseason NFL game this week. So if you've got a hankering for some physical contact on the gridiron, you're going to be able to scratch that itch this week. Yeah. We also begin football practice this week. Not exactly sure how much availability we're going to have yet. That understood, the next time we get together, we'll have had opportunity to interview some assistant coaches. We did not get assistant coaches during spring camp. Jeff Lebby kind of following the Nick Saban model and being the voice of the program during the spring. We will have an opportunity to meet with them. Not sure how often that's going to happen, but you know, we did do some interviews, me and some other people on the Mississippi State beat, prior to camp with some of our assistant coaches. I had a Matt Holacek feature, and a couple others. But we'll have an opportunity to speak to them. So look for that content over at Gene's page. And of course, we've got a big army of folks, so we'll divide and conquer. Do our best to get comments from all the assistant coaches that are made available to us. And you can find that for free at genespage.com. We make all the big room stuff, all the team stuff free. Exclusive interviews, of course, got to be VIP. But anything else out there that's just kind of floating out there, we're going to make that stuff for free. We want to be your one-stop shop for Mississippi State information. Got some more baseball news to discuss with you in our first segment of the show. The Major League Baseball teams have until 5 o'clock Eastern. I had told you guys noon, which didn't make a lot of sense to me, and I should have double-checked. I did double-check. It's 5 Eastern on Thursday, August the 1st, to come to terms. I suspect that we'll know everything there is to know before then, but it's not officially over until then. You got to kind of sweat it out. And I know I'm ready to kind of transition into football mode too, but no matter how this thing breaks out, you may have to dip back into the portal for another player, maybe two. You know, we'll see how things go with all that. But, yeah, still some roster management decisions that Chris Simonis will have to make one way or the other. And so that's life. Busy summer for baseball coaches, for sure. I mean, not to say that it isn't for football, but you know, those guys do get a dead period, but from the time that our coaching staff has gotten home from Charlottesville, Virginia, they have been on the recruiting trail with a rare exception. I think they had 2 weekends maybe that were dead. I think that's right. And that's it. So no Disney trips, no trips to Turks and Caicos, any of that kind of stuff. Maybe you can get down to you know, Redneck Riviera for a weekend, something like that. But even then, you got to, you know, maintain contact with these kids. Even though it's dead, they can contact you. She's got to be available. I know Chris Simonis and the staff are ready to kind of get things handled. And the good thing is you know, fall classes will be here very, very soon. And so while you may have some moves to make, you got to make them quickly, right? Because we just don't know for certain what's going to happen with a couple names. We did get some clarity on one today. Broke that story over at genespage.com. I'll bring you up to speed after our first commercial here, and let's get that out of the way, right? Our good friends at Bulldog Burger Company, I plan to get Bulldog Burger Company mañana. That's the plan. I'm eager to kind of see what the menu looks like here. There's always some specials and things like that, and I always ask what the special is. Even if I have a good idea of what I want, I ask what the special is because occasionally, something will pop up and say, you know what, hey, let's change gears here. Let's go that direction. Maybe that's your speed, too. Bulldog Burger Company has 3 great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They will make you and everybody around you better looking. I'm a big advocate of dessert to go, right? So get that chocolate shake. You can ride that ride home with a smile, or maybe get that Shipboys donuts bread pudding. Put that in the fridge, and a little bit later in the evening when you need a palate cleanser, you got it. And it's not like just going and getting snacks out of the pantry, right? I mean, there's something about having that restaurant-quality dessert that just makes it taste better, right? It's true. You know it's true. But when you're in there, have that great restaurant-quality burger. And if you like the salad, and I do, I'm a salad guy a lot, especially for lunch, I prefer the BLT salad grilled. You may like it fried. I'm not judging. I had a salad earlier last week with some friends, and every one of them got it fried. Of course, they don't have my girly figure, but to each their own. And I'm from South Mississippi, so we have to have ranch on all, every bit of that, right? No matter how you get it, grilled, fried, whatever, barbecued, whatever, parched, blackened. We're throwing ranch dressing on it because that's what we do. Bullet Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay, got some good news today as it relates to the baseball remaining draftees. Dane Burns, who was a 17th round selection by the Kansas City Royals, has opted out of signing a pro deal and will now head to Mississippi State for his freshman year. Now, he will be draft eligible in 2 years. And I've given you guys a little background about him. Let me kind of get more in depth here. He was a 2023 signee, had Tommy John, sat out last year as a gap year, and because of the fact that he didn't enroll, technically he was a recruitable athlete, and so other schools could have signed him. But he really wanted to be at Mississippi State. Hadn't pitched in about 18 months. Goes out there, gets on the hill in Summer League Baseball, and really lights up the radar gun. And listen, strike throwing percentage is not as high as we'd like it to be, but for a guy that hadn't thrown a baseball in a competitive ball game for nearly 2 years, we're just happy to see him back out there hitting the pipe, right? I mean, it's like that's how things work. So there will be a bit of a rehabilitation for him, but he's out there throwing 95-97 from the left, got a really nice slider. I'm eager to see what Justin Parker can do with him. And it's so interesting, too. You know, you put out, hey, he's coming back, and there's a few people that immediately in these Facebook groups, goodness gracious, it's so incredibly frustrating. It truly is. It's so, so, so frustrating. And it's not good for the program. And I don't think it's good for your mental health either, to be quite honest with you. It's like we get this guy who the Kansas City Royals drafted. And he had some other people that called him too prior to him being selected. Pro baseball wants Dane Burns. And then I put an article out there. It's extremely well received, I'd say, by 99% of the people. And immediately, Mr. Self-loathing Mississippi State fan has to go out there and say, well, you know, the walks are kind of high in summer ball. You don't know anything about this kid? You know nothing about him. I'm going to encourage people, too. This is one of the things, like, if I could enact the law, and I'm never going to run for political office, but if I could enact the law, here is what it would be. Like, we always talk about big tech and social media and things like that. Here is what I would require people to do. And it's, but Stevenson, it's an infringement upon my First Amendment right to demonstrate my ignorance. And you're right about that, I guess. I think you should be required to read articles before you comment. That's just me. Read the article before you spew your ignorance on social media. And listen, I'm a big fan of social media. I love the fact that I can see exactly who people are, right? And at the same time, too, other people can kind of masquerade. But like, it's one thing to put up like your filtered pictures and all this kind of stuff and all this scripted nonsense to kind of portray your life so much better than it truly is. Okay, cool. But I love the fact that people can get out there and talk about make comments about topics they know nothing about and be some sort of expert. And again, you remember my policy all during COVID. You know, everybody, of course, was a COVID expert, except for me. I didn't know anything. I just, you know, I went and got a couple shots. And kind of figured out that maybe that wasn't as helpful as they said it was, and didn't do it anymore. But I didn't get on Facebook and, you know, try to be the expert on everything, right? And then, of course, you know, we become, you know, Eastern European war experts. You know, we know all the nuances and all the incredible things that are so complicated and sophisticated about international relations. Yeah, I'm just a meager scribe, guys. I just write about Mississippi State for a living, listen to hard rock, and call it a day, you know? And I guess I haven't accomplished as much in life as I thought. Because little did I know that when I signed up for a Facebook account, you know, many years ago, that I wasn't Facebooking right. I thought I was. I was like, hey, this will be great. When the kids do something, I can put this on Facebook. And my mom, way down in South Mississippi, you know, instead of me having to send her a picture or email her a picture, I can just post it here on my wall. And then my mom, my sisters, and my dad, and everybody that loves my children will be able to see that. I was like, this is great. How wonderful is technology that I have the ability to take a picture right now, and within seconds, all the people that love me and those that hate me, everybody can see it. I said, well, this is a wonderful thing. I did not understand that I was supposed to study and learn all these other things about life. I thought I was just going to like live my life and then maybe post some things from my life to enable people that love me and my children to celebrate our lives. That's what I thought. But I have now learned that I was completely wrong. Completely wrong. Because I don't know as much as everybody else. I don't. I know Mississippi State sports. I know heavy metal. No tattoos. No long hair. No hot women. You know, I know those things. But I don't know, and I can't. I feel like I'm doing you a disservice because I just don't know these other things. Like something else will happen next week. Like I didn't know that all of you were ballistic experts as well. I didn't know that. And it's incredible how well-versed people are and how well-rounded they are, that they can pivot from COVID to Eastern European international relations to ballistics. It's incredible. It's incredible. It makes me think, you know what? Hey, you know, Steve, you sold a few books. You made a few people smile. But in many respects, you're a failure because you're not the Facebook expert. And maybe I should put that on my resume and just see if anybody does their due diligence to find out that I didn't really have much to say at all about COVID. You know, it's just me. But nevertheless, now that rant's over, we get so excited about, okay, this kid's coming back and kid's going to help us. Kid's going to help us. We expect him to, right? Justin Parker wants him. If anybody has earned grace when it comes to Mississippi State baseball in the last couple of years, it's Justin Parker. Justin Parker wants him. Kansas City Royals want him. But old John Q Bulldog in the Facebook group's like, I don't know. I don't know. Don't know. Okay. Nevertheless, Dane Burns is coming back to college baseball. And I guess arriving for college baseball in the first time. And I think people that have kind of followed baseball recruiting the last couple of years understand how significant this is. It's very significant. And if we can get him to return to form, and if anybody in the world can, it's Justin Parker. You really got something. And if one of the things I talk about sometimes too, and I don't know that a lot of people get it. Charlie Foster, the left-hander that we got from Georgia at the last minute, right before the MLB Combine concluded, that kid is a real dude. I'm not worried about arms at all. And, of course, that kind of leads us to Travis Smith. I want Travis Smith to be a Bulldog. Now, we're hearing that Milwaukee Brewers' second-round competitive B pick, Chris Lavonis, is going to go to Wake Forest instead of signing, which is huge. You only have about 1% of those guys in the top 10 rounds don't sign. It looks like Lavonis is going to be one of them. And, of course, Ryan Preggar from A&M was another. Both of them, it's so funny. The chances of those guys not signing are minuscule. But both of them that appear want kind of negatively impact us, right? You know, we know who Chris Lavonis is because of the fact that we're concerned about what Travis Smith's going to do, right? He was 15th round selection by the Brewers. Now, again, it's kind of like the whole Prager thing with the Angels. You don't get to carry that money forward. So if Lavonis doesn't sign, based on what I'm hearing, that's what's going to happen. If he doesn't sign with the Brewers, well, of course, that money that was allocated for that slot comes out of the bonus pool. Still leaves them, you know, a couple million dollars there to work through some day threes, thereabouts. I hadn't done the math a couple days, busy running the spot the last 3 days. So the wife could have some time off. But nevertheless, you know, we were hoping that Lavonis would sign with the Brewers and eat up most, if not all, of the remaining bonus pool. And so now it's a little sketchy, you know. And that's the thing that I've said, hey, if Lavonis signs, you don't have to worry about Smith coming to school. If Lavonis doesn't sign, then you got to worry about Smith coming to school. Not to say it's a done deal. And I think we'll get some clarity on all these situations today or tomorrow. I don't think it's going to go all the way into Thursday. I think we go to bed Wednesday night. We're going to know exactly kind of how things stand and what steps we may need to take as a contingency. When this whole process started, I was more worried about Travis Smith than I was Dave Mershon. A lot of it's because of the draft positioning. And it's because of the fact, too, that I really think that they took a flyer on Mershon, and we'll get to him shortly. But I really thought Travis Smith is probably a guy that's, you know, his productivity has kind of been negatively impacted by his availability or his lack of availability at times. He's been a little bit banged up, but the stuff is legit. I mean, this is a guy that can throw four and sometimes five pitches for strikes. I'm told that he has thrown as many as six. And so you probably need to pare that down a little bit and just kind of, you know, refine, you know, three to four pitches and say, you know what, hey, this is what we're going to go with. And I think Justin Parker can absolutely get him going. I think everybody probably sees it the same way. But I'm eager to kind of see what happens with him. And now, again, it looks like things are kind of coming into focus with Lavonis, which then, again, will impact the way the Brewers handle the rest of their draft. Now, interestingly enough, they've got a handful of guys in day three, rounds 11 through 20, that have some leverage to work with. So chances are you're not going to be able to just offer those kids $150 and call it a day. And if they were willing to sign for $150, they would have already done so. Of course, Tyson Harden did, but he was a senior. And good for Tyson to get $150, because a lot of guys in his situation get about $25,000-$50,000, and that's the end of it. So good for him. You know, for having a good agent, I guess, and maximizing his income potential there. So there's just, you know, like with the Angels, it was all down to kind of like, hey, whatever happens with Prager will basically give us some direction on what we think Mershon's going to do. You know, there's a lot more variables involved with this Brewers thing and Travis Smith. Now, Travis Smith's not going to make us or break us, but, yeah, he absolutely would make us better. You know, a guy that's spent a couple years in the Southeastern Conference, a guy that knows hitters, guy that knows ballparks. You know, he's not going to be an all and also a guy, too, looking for a reset. And so the draft is always a concern with him. And, again, you know, self-loathing Bulldog fan in Facebook groups immediately comes out and says, hey, look at his numbers. Look at his record. You know, forget the fact that he didn't pitch for a month. You know, and he pitched much of the last year with some inflammation. And, you know, had to go to the bullpen. You know, just couldn't work this deep into ball games because the only thing that was really going to heal his issue was going to be rest. He's a competitor. He was trying to help those guys, you know, win an SEC championship and get to Omaha for the first time in school history, and they did. And so I worked through all that because I'd love to be. You ever Googled yourself? You may be alarmed to know exactly how much of your private information and data is out there for anybody to access. Whether it be your phone number, your home address, or details about your family. It could be your kids' names, their ages. Whether you agree to this disclosure or not, and that's because data brokers are collecting and selling your information to marketers, scammers, and basically anyone willing to pay. It's the reason robocallers know your name, and while ads seem to follow you on every digital platform out there. Well, Aura fights back for you. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a data breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just data broker removal. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep all your logins safe, and they even give you spam call protection to cut off those stupid scammers. Aura also scans the dark web regularly for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, passwords, and they will notify you instantly if you are somehow exposed. If your identity is ever stolen, you're backed up by up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support to help you recover everything quickly. Other services charge about the same, but they only cover one or two areas. With Aura, you get it all. Data broker removal, credit and identity monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all with one simple app. Aura removes what is already exposed, protects what isn't, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That gives them plenty of time to go ahead and start protecting your data. They can remove your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are all safeguarded. That's Aura, AURA.com/remove. Certain terms and conditions apply. Be sure and check it out today at aura.com.
My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance, ready in 30 seconds. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
I'm able to tell you today, I know exactly what everybody's going to do, but we don't yet, but we're close. Again, the deadline is Thursday, 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern, but again, I think we're going to know before then. But I think everybody involved will sleep a lot better once Thursday kind of comes and goes. And the truth of the matter is, you know, we've had a great draft, but it seemed like in the last couple rounds really gave us a lot to worry about. And here we are now up against the deadline, still kind of worrying about that. You know, we'd love for guys to have come out, you know, 2 days after the draft, said, hey, I'm going to school, you know. And I told you guys before, when I coached baseball in Baton Rouge, we had Jerry Poche in our district. And, of course, you know, great pitcher at LSU. I think he's out of pro ball now. But I remember going to coach first base, and Poche was playing first. Again, he was drafted and pitched extensively in his career, but they saved him for their non-district games because they, you know, trying to add some, we'll call it RPI, but it was quality points, you know, and so they would go out and play teams. Lutcher would play midweek games against teams that were highly rated to help them in their quest to win a state championship. And so he never pitched against us. But I went to first base, and I'm like, hey, you know, Lutcher, surely you're going to go pro, man. I mean, 92, 93 from the left. You know, this is back, you know, 2010, 2011 maybe. And he's like, ah, now I'm going to LSU. He goes, man, I've wanted to be an LSU Tiger my whole life. He goes, my dream, even beyond pro baseball, is to go to Omaha and win an AFL championship in Dogpile at Omaha. And I thought then, I said, I wish we had more young men in Mississippi that felt this way. I wish we had more sons within our fan base that felt this way. When presented with that opportunity, it's, hey, you know, playing at Duty Noble and going to Omaha and changing the decals on the center field wall, that means more to me than the rest of this stuff. But all these people get involved. And, you know, Poche, of course, you know, came back too, you know, and then went and had his – they didn't win an AFL title. They did lose to Florida. But at least he got that opportunity, right? That was his lifelong dream. And so – that's one of the things, again, and not to belabor the point, I wish there were more people with those options that felt that way about Mississippi State. And I think Dane Burns, in some respects, does, even though he's a guy that grew up in Texas. Originally a Canadian. Dad was a hockey player. But he's like, you know, that atmosphere there is just not something I'm ready to walk away from. I want the opportunity to pitch at Duty Noble Field. Yeah, now it's official. And so now, you know, now we kind of sweat out the Dave Marchand thing. Now, Dave Marchand and the family took a trip to Los Angeles over the weekend. I understood they either flew back yesterday or flying back today. I expect a decision tomorrow, if not before. I think it'll be tomorrow. And, you know, we'll let Dave announce his news on his timing, no matter what that may be. Now, of course, if Marchand elects to come back, that's great. If he elects to sign with the Angels, we wish him the best. You go out there and carry your Bulldog legacy forward. You know, that's a good thing for us, too. Maybe that didn't help us immediately, but, you know, anytime, think about this, we have 11 players drafted and all 11 of those guys signed, and, you know, it's the biggest class in the country, right? We love to have Marchand back. though. Don't get me wrong. I'm not pushing them out the door by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it's important to understand we are still Mississippi State. And Dylan Cup is a guy that turned down big money to come to school. A lot of people didn't expect that. We were beginning to hear later in the process that, you know, he needed to come work on the bat tool a little bit. I don't know if you guys realize this, that last stretch before he got hurt, he had 295. And he is a little bit bigger than Dave Marchand, you know. And Dave is a guy, the thing that I respect so much about Dave Marchand is how many times did you see him eat up a 110-mile-an-hour one-hopper and throw it to first like it was nothing? And people forget Dylan Cup started the year at shortstop. And so we're going to be fine either way. And I think, again, unless Dave announces tonight, I think Dave will take the night with the family, speak to his agent, make a final decision, and then we'll kind of move forward. And then Chris Simonis will know exactly what we need to do. You know, do we need to go out there and get another player in the portal? Possibly. I mean, obviously, you're losing a very important offensive piece if Marchand opts to sign with the Angels. I mean, you know this, right? Or do now you say, you know what, hey, maybe we go get another arm just in case Travis Smith signs. Or perhaps you don't do anything. I don't think that's the scenario, though. I think if it unfolds where Smith and Marchand both sign, I think you have to go get somebody else. And maybe not a pitcher. And maybe since Dane Burns has kind of opted back in, you say, you know what, hey, I think we're good here. And we'll kind of push forward. But, I mean, roster construction is such a big decision. And now, of course, with the new scholarships and all that kind of stuff, we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show. You know, now you got 34 roster spots, so that's less roster spots, but you can give up to 34 scholarships. Not every school will. You know, and that's a thing that will become a part of the recruiting piece, too. But it's going to be an interesting transition here in the next couple of years, kind of figuring those things out. But I think when I go back and look at the beginning of the draft, and I think, well, you know, certainly, you know, we thought Dave Marchand may go on day two, and we were worried about that. Like, if he goes on day two as a draft-eligible sophomore, he's probably going to sign. Then when he goes on day three, you think, well, he may sign, but it's kind of got to depend on some other things, you know. And so that's just one of those things you just kind of got to let it play out. And it was very interesting. Like, I spoke to Dave Marchand. After day two, and he goes, you know, I'm just not ready to commit to anything. We're going to figure all this stuff out. And I trust that everybody involved in that process has David Marchand's best interest at heart. He is a very intelligent guy from a great family. And no matter what he decides, we're going to be supportive of him. And again, we are Mississippi State. And I think sometimes some of our people forget that. We are Mississippi State. Mississippi State's going to always attract, sign, recruit good players. Transfers. People want to come play at Duty Noble Field in front of all of you. We're Mississippi State. You know, we're never defined by one player, and we've had some legends come through this program. And of course, you know, maybe best case scenario for State is Marchand comes back, and then all of a sudden, you know, maybe he goes to second, maybe Dylan Cup plays short. You know, you can never have too many good players. So all that'll kind of play out. So again, entering the day, we had three names that we were concerned about. One of those has now announced that he is coming to school, and we wait out the other two. And I think Tuesday will be Dave Marchand decision day. I think we'll know tomorrow. I think that's the case. And again, we're going to let him announce his decision on his timing. We try to do that as best we can. You know, of course, when we're talking about football recruiting, I'll tell you where I think a kid's kind of trending. But when it gets down to it, you know, we never want to rob a kid of that ability. You know, we may get a story together, get a graphic together, and wait on their timing, but that's kind of how we do things. But we just kind of have to kind of work through this, you know. And listen, no matter what happens this week, it does not change anything about the summer and the fact that we survived the draft only losing two high school signees. We didn't lose any of our junior college guys. As a matter of fact, a couple of those guys are already here. And then in addition to that, we've had a good portal process. And again, that process is still maybe elongated a little bit. You know, we'll just kind of have to see what happens here in these next few days. But you basically got about 2 weeks, like, right? So let's, like, say for an example, you find out what these guys are going to do, and let's say you don't get a good result. Well, then you got to pop and move pretty quickly. And it's not like the staff's just been kind of sitting around flat-footed, just kind of, well, you know, we'll just kind of wait and see, you know. But yeah, you're committed to the guys that have been committed to you. Simple as that. You simply have to do that. And so we'll see how things play out here in the next couple days. By the time we get together again on Wednesday, I think we'll definitely know for sure on Marshawn and likely know on Travis Smith as well. So we get back together. And that's just kind of dominated the headlines. And people everywhere that I go, Steve, what's going on with David Marshawn? I mean, like even this all weekend, I worked at the float spa, True Rest, my wife's business, and just about everybody that came in, hey, you got a Marshawn update for me? It's because people care. I mean, people love Mississippi State baseball. People love Dave Marshawn, and certainly want the ride to continue. But, you know, we'll just kind of see how things play out. And I don't want Travis Smith to be lost in the discussion either, because he could be a really big piece for us coming forward. Of course, Marshawn is a current player, so as a result, our fans have a greater sense of knowledge about him and his ability because he's played so well for Mississippi State. So Travis Smith is an important piece, but there's just not the emotional investment yet because we haven't seen him suit up in the M over S and take the field at Duty Noble Field. And so that's always important to understand. So that's your update on baseball for today. And when we get back together on Wednesday, I think on Wednesday, again, we'll know exactly what needs to take place moving forward. Time for today's top 10 list is always brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair is a mortgage professional. Blair is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. His phone number, 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. He also, again, I told you he has changed his contact photo, which kind of throws me for a loop. You know, looks a little preppy there. What would you expect? You know. But here's what you can expect from him as it relates to your mortgage needs. Listen, Blair can get you to the closing table when perhaps nobody else can, because 23 years of experience are underwriting his work. Yeah, this is a guy that knows how to structure your loan to get it through underwriting and get you to the closing table. Get that pre-qualification letter from Blair. Get your real estate agent even more motivated, and we have some amazing ones here in the Mississippi State family. I like to keep it in the fam when we can, because you never know where your money's going to end up, right? You spend your money with Bulldogs, it's more likely to get spent on Mississippi State merchandise, tickets, and that sort of stuff. But Blair will help all comers. Visit him at closewithblair.com if you're looking for a game day condo, perhaps your first home, or perhaps a new home because you've outgrown the previous one. Blair Chandler. Take some guesswork out of life. Let Blair Chandler help you. Okay. Recently, just about 2 weeks ago, there was an announcement made that Jack Russell, the great legendary singer from the 80s and early 90s rock band Great White, has retired from touring and has shared that he is suffering with Lewy body dementia. It's tough. And it has been a really, really rough stretch for Jack Russell, really, this century. And I commend him for going out and still trying to make some things happen. You know, Great White, of course, a band that kind of came along in the late 80s, and they'd been around for a while. They were originally a band called Dante Fox, and then changed the name to Great White and kind of took on the old Shark moniker and that sort of stuff, and really had their breakthrough with the great album Once Bitten. Of course, it was a little bit of a marketing ploy, as the follow-up album was already named Twice Shy. You know, they already had the record deal in place and that sort of stuff. But, yeah, the band kind of got going in the early 80s, but it took a little while for them to get the big break. But it says nothing about Jack Russell's talent. Now, you can actually find those old demos of the Dante Fox era, and they are very much demos. They've not been polished in any way. But you could tell even back then, even with an unpolished recording, Jack Russell was legit. And it's called the Roots of Great White, I think. But it's about maybe a dozen demos. You can check that out if you're so inclined. I wish a lot of that stuff would be remastered, to be quite honest with you. But, you know, hey, I understand it's a business. You got to pay somebody to do all that. And maybe you're not going to sell enough records for that. But, you know, Great White, great, great run. And then, of course, they broke up for a while. And I'm linked up with these guys, I guess, in 96 in Lafayette, Louisiana. had a chance to meet Jack and Mark and spend some time with them. And Mark had lost a ton of weight. And so I asked him, dude, what do you do? And he said, I stopped drinking. I started focusing on bringing my kid to Chuck E. Cheese and things like that. And, of course, I've met with Mark a couple times since then. And, you know, he did go off the wagon for a while and came back. But they just never could really kind of get it back together. And Jack and Mark were kind of the founding members of the band. And so you had two versions of Great White. You had Great White that Mark Kendall led and had several singers at some point, but really like everything they'd done. And Jack continued to go out and play under Jack Russell's Great White, and it just was not as grand a production. And a lot of it's because Jack's had all these medical issues, and Jack also struggled tremendously with depression and substance abuse. And when I had a chance to talk to him in 96, everybody in the band was sober. People tried to hand him a beer when he was on stage. He turned it down, talked to him for a while, and then, of course, they, again, kind of departed, and they had that that fire in Warwick, Rhode Island. That was Jack Russell's Great White. And someone within the band or in their production company or management group kind of dropped the ball and didn't understand they couldn't use pyrotechnics in this little small club. And it kind of stands to reason. Because it wasn't long after the show started, they started the pyrotechnics and the whole place went up in smoke, the station, and 100 people lost their lives, including a member of the band. And so Jack got really depressed, got back into drugs and alcohol, and then after Janie Lane passed away, Jack began to work on a program of recovery. And we have some mutual friends, but I've had some people that have told me that Jack's health and memory and really his mental health has not been good for several years. It still makes it very sad to think about a guy that you know, kind of gave us part of the soundtrack of our lives is now retired. And what happens with a lot of these old 80s rockers, man, is like this is all they can do. And so they may come play your county fair just for a warm meal and some gas money, you know, and that's kind of what happened with Jack. It's like while Great White was still playing casinos and touring and going to Monsters of Rock cruise and things like that, Jack Russell's Great White was playing just about anywhere they could get a gig. But I want to celebrate the music of Jack White today, Jack Russell. And so we got top 10 songs. We're going to get a couple solo tracks in here. I think Jack was probably at his best. I love the Led Zeppelin cover stuff he did. Like, their version of Immigrant Song is ridiculously good. It's never as good as the original, but it's probably the closest thing to the original. A lot of other people have covered Led Zeppelin tracks. I think Great White's version of Baby, I'm Gonna Leave You is outstanding, too. But here we go. Number 10 off Jack Russell's first solo album. It's a ballad that I think that you'll dig, and you may not know it. It was released in 96, in the latter part of 96. On an album called Shelter Me, and it's a track called Leave Me Lonely. Really like that one. There's another song on there called Lose a Good Thing. That's another good one too, but for our list today, it's Leave Me Lonely at number 10 off the Jack Russell solo album, Shelter Me. Our number 9 track, also from a Jack Russell solo album that came out in 2002, and a lot of this stuff was kind of in the works before they had the fire. You know, and so it's a great track called, it's a title track from that album, For You. It is an absolutely beautiful track, and it's probably one that you haven't heard, and there's just so much, again, so much tragedy around, you know, Jack this century, but this is a song that I think in many respects, because of the fire, there were a lot of people that had a lot of resentment towards Jack. Of course, you know, those weren't Jack's decisions, but he is the face of the band, and that's... that's kind of how things work. I mean, it's like when something's wrong with one of my books, I mean, it doesn't matter if an editor messed it up or a typesetter. It's my name on the book. It's kind of like this, of course, much different dynamic, much more serious situation when people lose their lives. And I remember when all that stuff happened, it was absolutely ridiculous. It was just absolutely so incredibly tragic. It was difficult to wrap your mind around it. I wanted to work in a song from Jack Russell's Great White albums, and it took some time to kind of work through this because, again, you know, Jack's lost a little bit too. And there's some things that can't be covered in the studio, especially when you don't have, you know, money right? There are a lot of people. There's a lot of very mediocre singers today making a ton of money because they're studio superstars. Kind of a rocking track here called Blame It on the Night. Blame It on the Night. That's Jack Russell's Greg White. But the rest of the way, we're going to go with, and that's off He Saw It Coming. But we're going to go now the rest of the way, Greg White stuff. So stuff you're a lot more familiar with. Off They Shot in the Dark album, number 7 is Face the Day, and that's a song that is still played as part of the set list from time to time. And again, that's before they even got big. You know, there were a lot of people that kind of caught the Great White wave with Once Bitten and then went back and looked at the earlier stuff. They had a self-titled album that was pretty good, but again, there wasn't a lot of money in production value, so it wasn't a big hit. It wasn't exactly radio-friendly. But Face the Day, great track. Number 6, I love this one off the Hooked album. Also one of my favorite album covers, so don't judge me. I think it's great. I think it's great. It's called Hooked, and people are like, but Steve, she's not wearing any clothes. And I say, so? It's art. Relax. It's not distasteful. Have a Coke and a smile. Relax a little bit. But Face the Day, great track. But off our Hooked album, it's Call It Rock and Roll. I absolutely love this song. I love the guitar on it. It is so incredibly true to classic rock. And I think Jack's vocal on this really, really, really delivers. Number 5, probably, depending on what day you've asked me, this may be my favorite track off of Once Bitten. I think the opening riff to this is incredible. I think it's some of Mark Kendall's best work. And I think the vocal on it is among the best things Jack Russell ever did, which is the reason it makes our list here. And it's one of the last real rocking tracks on our list today. But it's Lady Red Light. I love that song. Love it. I've got no emotional connection to it, but it's one of those songs you put it on and you hit the gas pedal and you better watch your speed because it's going to get you going. It's going to get you grooving a little bit. It's just one of those songs. It's like the record company decided to finally put some money behind this band. It's like, hey, they've kind of built a following out here. The solo, the self-titled album was pretty good. Shot in the Dark's pretty good. And so it's like, hey, let's get serious. These guys are writing some good tracks. And this was a hit. And it's one of those songs, too, even to this day, that people want to hear performed live. And Mark still pulls it off. It's amazing. Lady Red Light. Number 4. Huge hit here. This is in the power ballad era when it was kind of a requirement, right? You had to come out with the banger, and then you had to have a power ballad, because that got girls to come to the show. They got girls to go buy your record, and more times than not, they didn't listen to the whole album, but they loved those songs. And an incredible track called "The Angel Song" off Twice Shy. And if you had that album, you know it. Of course, it's got Mr. Bone and Once Bitten, Twice Shy, which is a cover, which is why they didn't make our list. And just about any of us can sing that. But I think Jack does such a great job on that cover. He really does. He just kind of finds a pocket, man, and it's so perfectly put together. It's better than the original. Number 3, an incredible song, basically written from the vantage point of somebody that is in love with somebody else who is involved with somebody else. So it's basically a cheating song in many respects, but it's like this other person kind of has this longing for this person that they can't be with right now, and it's Save Your Love. And the vocal delivery on this, to me, is absolutely legendary. If you ever want to introduce somebody to Great White and Jack Russell, and then the power and majesty of his voice, this is the song. Save Your Love. No matter how you feel about the lyrical content, the vocal delivery is just beautiful. Number 2, and maybe this is written from the vantage point of the other dude that's with the woman that Save Your Love is written about. I don't know. It's kind of hit me. But it's House of Broken Love. And, of course, it's more of a bluesy-type track. And I think Jack, especially the latter half of this track, when he really kind of begins to express a little artistic freedom, he really brings it home. I'm sleeping with the devil with no help from above. I'm sleeping with the devil in this house of broken love. Now you can kind of see the segue, right? I guess that's the case, right? For every beautiful woman out there, I guess maybe all women, right? there's some guy that's with them. It's kind of things aren't working out, and somebody else that wants to be with them. Yeah, and here's the thing too. I'll share with you a little aside here, and we've had this discussion many times around in my family. And I told my sons this, and my daughters and my wife don't like this, and maybe some of my female listeners won't like this either. But I'm going to say it anyway, because this is my experience. Everybody's big on their truth. This is my truth. I'm going to tell my story. There are no single girls. They're not. At least it hadn't been my experience, right? And I've been off the dating pool for a long time. But I suspect it's even more difficult now than it was back then, because now with social media, there's so many people that can stay in contact with you, right? It's so much easier to communicate. And somebody goes out there and throws some thirst trap picture on their Instagram, and it invites a lot of attention. And so, as I have shared many times, and she still disputes this, she has absolutely got a revisionist history. When I met Dana, she was dating somebody else. It's true. She was. She goes, no, it's kind of like, no, you were dating him. You were dating him. Okay. I mean, I've been a firm commitment, but you were dating him. And there's always some guy they're talking to. And maybe he's in the friend zone. And maybe he's a plan B. Maybe he's a fallback. You know, but, and Kings, you got to make sure you stay out of that. Because once she puts you in the friend zone, it's almost impossible to come back from that. Just telling you that. And not to mention, you don't want to be somebody's second choice. You say that, oh, I'd be okay. No, no, you wouldn't. You wouldn't be. It's not like you're dealing with Carmen Electra, okay? Right? Let's just lay it for what it is. But yeah, not everybody out there has the same perspective. Maybe you see it differently. But I just know that it's every girl that I dated, every single one of them, was fooling with somebody else when I met them. A lot of monkey branching going on out there. Just saying. Maybe you're not familiar with the term. Look it up. Monkey branching. You're kind of hanging on to one limb and reaching for the next one. There you go. There's your visualization. Don't be monkey branching when somebody else is true romancing. But number one, and I don't know how else it could be, it's the breakthrough track, Rock Me. And Jack, you talk about a banger. You talk about a song that absolutely will get your blood pumping. It's Rock Me. And of course, you know, it's another song, a little bit about infidelity, you know, kind of about borrowed love and things of that nature. But it is one of those masterpieces. It actually has two guitar solos in it, both by Mark Kendall, and they still play it live, and they absolutely pull it off. Saw them, took Dana to see them last year, I guess, in Biloxi with Slaughter, and they were great. Seen them a couple times with Slaughter. And I like bands that are so consistent. And, you know, hey, you may come out and play one or two of the new stuff, but you play the hits. And if Great White's a nostalgia act, then so be it. But I'm glad these songs are out there still being played. But I'm really sad to know that Jack Russell, that there's no chance of a reunion anymore. And it's not just the fact that, hey, Jack's retiring because maybe, you know, ticket sales aren't great. Now, Jack's retiring because his health is deteriorating, and, you know, Jack may not be with us much longer. And I thought, you know what, hey, let's take some time today to celebrate the great career of Jack Russell. And Jack, again, so many guest spots, man. Like, you can go to the Wikipedia page, and there's probably like, you know, 25, 30 songs where he sat in with other people, and it's because he was so well-respected and so well-liked. And I think there were a lot of people, too, after the tragedy, you know, in Rhode Island. I think a lot of people, you know, were trying to help Mark and Jack and everybody maybe reconcile, because I think Jack probably needed that. I can't even begin to imagine what that man went through. And so maybe crank up some Jack Russell today, some Great White. Hope you enjoy the list. And thanks, as always, for your top 10 ideas. We do use them here on the show. Sometimes I get, you know, get misdirected. I say, I want to do this. Or something will happen. You know, somebody passes away. There's a new album that comes out. And I want to make sure that we talk about that. But we do enjoy your ideas. But if I can't do it justice, I'm not going to do the list, because I know that people are very passionate about music. So if you want to get us your ideas, you can find me on all forms of social media, at Scout Steve R. Of course, Roy Samanti, our friend that distributes the list to all of you and puts it up on Spotify, can be found on Twitter and Spotify under the handle Dogmatic67. That's DawgMatic67. All right. Next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmarts. You know them well, or you should. Best place to buy Mississippi State merchandise in the universe is Campus Bookmart, right here in Starkville, Mississippi. And you know why? They're Bulldogs too. they know the right colors, right? You don't want to go order a shirt off Amazon and get a crimson or a cardinal red Mississippi State shirt. And even though you've spent your hard-earned cash on it, you want to wear it, but deep down you really don't because you don't. You know the rest of the Bulldogs are going to look at you with a look of disdain. Don't take any chances and make any fashion faux pas. Deal with Campus Bookmart. They know what true maroon looks like. They'll outfit you and your family, help you decorate your home, get your fan cave updated. No better place to go than Campus Bookmart. Go by and see their smiling faces next time you're in town. If you can't make it to town, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays, and that is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. All right, we continue our opponent previews. Week four. We're going to take on the Florida Gators. And of all the times in our history that we played the Florida Gators, except maybe in the 40s, this may be the best time to play them. It has not been a good run for Billy Napier. And there were a lot of people, including myself, that thought he would be a good fit. I thought when we went out and hired Jim Moorhead that Napier may be the way to go. Or maybe it was the Leach. Yeah, maybe the Leach. Yeah, Leach. We're chasing Mike Leach at the time. And I liked what Billy Napier did at UL Lafayette or Louisiana, whatever you want to call them, Southwest Louisiana, whatever, USL. It's an identity crisis. But Napier was a guy I thought that we could recruit to his offense within our natural footprint. Now, it's a little different recruiting to Florida. You'd say, you know, it's easier. And I remember when Dan Mullen and some of our longtime assistants here left and went to Florida and like, hey, you don't understand the doors that this logo opens for you. Well, of course, you know, they did some good things there and then Dan Mullen was gone, so bring in Billy Napier. So year one, they go 6-6 in a regular season and head out to the Las Vegas Bowl and play Oregon State and get crushed. 30-3. Wasn't great. By any stretch of the imagination, it was not great. Ended the year on a three-game losing streak. So the bloom was kind of off the rose then, and there were a lot of Gator fans who were like, I don't think that Billy Ball is going to work out for us. So get into year 23, they go 5-7. They open up, lose at Utah. They beat McNeese. They somehow managed to beat Tennessee. And at that point, I was like, you know what? Hey, maybe these guys are better than I thought. And, of course, Hype and those guys were doing a good job at Tennessee. They beat Charlotte the next week. So, hey, you look up and say, the Gators are 3-1, getting ready to go to Lexington. They'll be good. No, they weren't. They get beat by nearly three touchdowns by the Wildcats, 33-14. At that point, people are like, you know what? I think we're done. They bounce back and beat Vanderbilt, and then they go to Williams-Brice in a game that I thought they would lose because it was a toss-up game on the road. And South Carolina's pretty good that year. Florida wins 41-39. And so then you head into the world's largest cocktail party in Jacksonville, Florida, and Georgia smacks them 43-20. And at this point, you're absolutely reeling. You know, you already got three losses, and you're thinking, you know what, this year could spiral out of control. They go to Arkansas, and excuse me, they host Arkansas, and then lose in overtime, 39-36. Then you got to go to Baton Rouge. It's never easy to go win in Baton Rouge, no matter what their roster looks like. We know from experience. But they go down there, and the Tigers get them pretty good, 52-35. You give up 50 points on defense, it's tough, man. Then you got to go to Missouri, which was really maybe the biggest story in the Southeastern Conference last year. At the time, the Tigers ranked number 9 in the country. And you lose down there 33-31, kind of one of those crazy games. And then you look up and say, you know what, this is not going to work out. We're going to have to beat Florida State, who is vying for a spot in the playoff to get bowl eligible. Well, Florida State didn't make the playoff, but they did manage to beat the Gators 24-15. And so you end the year 5-7. So back-to-back losing years for Billy Napier at Florida. Now, Billy did not want any part of the SEC West. We all know this. It's well documented. Turned down a lot of jobs in the West. Kind of fleeing, I guess, from Alabama and LSU. Wanted a South Carolina job, didn't get it. Worked out well for him, I would say. Let's be kind of call it for what it is. If you had a choice between coaching at Florida and South Carolina, and you don't have an allegiance to either school, you're going to pick Florida every time. Worked out well for Billy. Kind of fell forward. But as the fans kind of call him, Sunbelt Billy, has not been up to SEC snuff, much less Florida Gator snuff. I think Scott Strickland's really got a decision on his hands this year. And I think the Bull Gators out there are not going to sit back and say, you know what, we wrote a bad deal. We put ourselves on a bad contract. We're going to find a way to get out of this. So the Gators will open up in Gainesville, in the Swamp, against Miami. And that could prove to be a difficult game. Well, we all see it for what it is. I think in many respects, it's kind of a must-win game for Billy. I mean, would Florida fire him in season? I think probably not. But if you're Billy Napier, you need to find a way to get a win here because of the fact there's not a lot of sheer wins on this schedule. Now, the first one is Samford. You know, Samford's kind of got that air raid offense, too, and they kind of keep you off balance. They just don't always have the horses. But, you know, let's just kind of call it for what it is. That's the only sure win in the early portion of the schedule. September the 14th, the Texas A&M Aggies and Mike Elko will head to the Swamp. Not sure what to expect from the Aggies. And for that matter, not really sure what to expect from the Gators. But I think you look at this game and you think, you know what, if you're Florida, you have to win this game. There is a real possibility that Florida will be 1-2 before they travel to Mississippi State in week 4. And then you begin to think about that for a second. You know, the weight and the burden of all the expectations of the Gator faithful. They're already turning on you. They're already calling for Scott Strickland to fire you. And you got to go on a road game. It's 11 a.m. And there'll be a lot of Mississippi State people that think, you know what, hey, we probably should be 3-0, maybe 2-1 at this point. We will be the team that will have the more favorable record or should have the more favorable record, and we're playing this game at home. And there's really no pressure on Mississippi State and Jeff Lebby, but there will be a ton on Billy Napier in Florida because you want to fight back that whole here-we-go-again type thing. I think Mississippi State has a great chance to win this game. Now, a couple weeks later, they get the night game against Central Florida. And Gus Malzahn is a guy that obviously understands offense. Gus Malzahn's a guy, too, that, you know, we talked to him about our coaching search last year, you know, and said, you know what, hey, he may be a guy that may have some interest. Then there was discussion. It's like, you know, hey, we're gonna ride this thing out. UCF will be his last stop. He'll retire there. But Gus Malzahn's a guy that can be a fly in the gator ointment, too. Even though that game is in Gainesville, based on what you know about both teams right now, would you pick Florida? I mean, would you bet any money on Florida? He says, well, you know, Steve, it's a home game. I get it. But you got to know that Central Florida is going to be jacked sky high to go in there and play Florida. The next week, they got to go to Knoxville and play Tennessee. Won't be sneaking up on them. The following week, Kentucky comes in. And I think, you know, Florida should be able to out-talent Kentucky. They got to play their game, though. 2 weeks later, got to go back to Jacksonville and play Georgia. The next week, you go to Texas, a team that's forecasted to make the playoffs. Then you bring LSU in, and you'd say, you know what, hey, you know, on most situations, it'd probably be a good scenario here to win this ballgame. How do we know what they're going to look like at that point? Is Billy still the coach then? The next week, senior day, Ole Miss comes in, a team that some people are they're getting some preseason top 10 picks. And so Ole Miss should be in a situation that, hey, they ought to be able to go in there and get that game. They'll need it, I think. Of course, we'll be rooting for the Gators no matter who the coach is. The following week, you go to Florida State. And so you run this thing down and you look at it and say, you know what, hey, at best, this season is probably like last year. Can you count, honestly, right now, can you count to 6 wins? I don't know that you can. Outside of that Samford game, you know, what's the game you look at? There's no Vanderbilt on the schedule. And for that matter, there's no Arkansas on the schedule. You know, and you know, there's a Mississippi State game you got to go play in Starkville against a team that are probably pretty high at that point. I think we'll have had some success and kind of settled a receiver rotation. But again, this could be, I mean, they may be staring 4-8 right in the face. Or worse. You know, if you have to call it right now, Samford, dub. And then, okay, Central Florida, okay, maybe a toss-up game, maybe. Maybe. Kentucky, maybe a toss-up game. Mississippi State, toss-up game. But you start counting wins here, and I don't know that there are any sure wins on this schedule outside of Samford. And so I think at the end of this calendar year, Scott Strickland and the powers that be at the University of Florida are going to have to make a coaching change. And it's probably going to be very expensive. But Florida wants to be Florida. And you know it burns them up to see Georgia kind of becoming what they have become under Kirby Smart. You know, nothing fires people up more than seeing their rivals have success while they're struggling. And don't think that Georgia's not going to go run it up on Florida if they can, because that's what the fans want. I think we all see it for the same thing. This is a very vulnerable Florida team. Now, let's take a quick look and kind of look at, you know, who the stars were from last year, and then we'll look at some transfer portal stuff. But, you know, they have not been Florida. And I think that's one of the things, the thing that gets administrators really fired up is when you lose your identity. You start working through this and say, let me ask you this right now. Is anybody in the Southeastern Conference scared of Florida? I'm waiting. You're going to say, no, Steve, they're not. There's nobody right now that's looking at that schedule and saying, you know what, that's a sure loss. Florida has lost their mystique under Billy Napier. They averaged 28 points a game, and you know what? They gave up just under 28 points a game. That tends to mean you didn't have a good year. Scored 341 points, allowed 331. 260 first downs for them, and most of that through the air. They also gave up 212 first downs themselves. Pretty balanced in that respect. They ran for 1,794 yards, and again, that's kind of Billy's trademark, right? Is, you know, that three-pronged running attack is kind of line up and get after you and just kind of win those wars of attrition. Well, they didn't. They allowed 1,867 yards. And again, you go back and look at that schedule last year. I mean, you know, I mean, there's not a lot of weeks off, but you got to beat up on non-conference opponents. And then, you know, that's the thing to real quickly to pause this, put a pin in this for a second. When you talk about the 9-game SEC schedule, you got to think, if you're going to have 9, you know, does South Carolina want to give up Clemson? No. Does Florida want to give up Florida State? No. And then you get Miami in there every now and again, too. So don't think this is all just a Mississippi State Ole Miss thing where, hey, we need these 4 non-conference games and lean years to be bowl eligible. There's another layer to this. And I've been told here as of late, don't read anything into those West Coast cancellations. Because a lot of that is those schools out there, because of the fact many of them are in transition themselves, they've got to think about some other scheduling stuff. So that's important to understand. But back to Florida, looking at last year, looking at you know, total offense last year, they put up, you know, 495 yards of offense, and they allowed 4587. Again, defensively, it's not what you'd expect from Florida. You always expect Florida to be a high-scoring offense that has a very physical defense. It just hadn't kind of been come to fruition for them. They scored 41 touchdowns, allowed 40. It's like you go through all this stuff, and it's all basically even. And so, yeah, sounded like a 6-6 team. You know, worked out a little bit worse for them because of a crazy game at Missouri. But what's interesting, too, you know, you start working through, you know, everything involved with all this. We talk about, you know, punting, things of that nature, but – You know, Florida committed more penalties last year than their opponents did. You know, so, you know, you got to be a disciplined ball team. And they won time of possession, but, you know, goodness gracious, you'd expect that for a team that wants to prioritize the running game. Third down conversions weren't great, 36.67%. They allowed 35.62. Went for it on fourth down 22 times, made it 9. But red zone efficiency, not necessarily a strong suit for them either. 48 trips to the red zone, only 32 touchdowns. Opponents went 40 times, scored 23. So the ratio not exactly good there either. So red zone defense looked better than red zone offense. But you start looking and see who the heroes were for them last year. We talk about this three-pronged running attack. Of course, Montrell Johnson led them in rushing last year at 817 yards. And Trevor Etienne, who was an absolute star, 753 yards. And then Treyon Webb, 163. So and he only had, you know, 26. It was mainly Johnson and ATN kind of just carrying the mail for them. Webb was just a freshman out of Trinity Christian there in Jacksonville. Richie Pearsall, it's a name people know, carried it a little bit too. But, you know, Graham Mertz obviously was the dude last year, 261 completions on 358 attempts. Took care of the football pretty well. I mean, completion percentage of right at 73%, just 3 picks, 20 touchdowns. But, you know, a lot of that, too, you start looking at yards per attempt. It's just, you know, it's not great, you know. I mean, it's very ball control type stuff. Max Brown did play in 6 games last year. He was 19 of 28 with a pick, didn't throw any touchdowns. It was mainly the Graham Mertz show. Look at the receiving side of things, Ricky Pearsall, obviously a star for them last year. 65 grabs, 965 yards, and 4 touchdowns. Eugene Wilson, the third, 61 balls, 538. And from there, the drop-off is pretty significant. And they do play a lot of people. That's not in any way to suggest that they're completely devoid of talent. But not really the game-breaking receivers. Of course, Wilson with 6 touchdowns led the team. But it's not what we're used to seeing from Florida. But there is some room for optimism. Obviously, Graham Mertz is a guy that you know, a lot of people are excited about. You know, that he's a quarterback that a lot of people expect him to be a pro. You know, I think that's a big part of all this stuff, too. I mean, that's a guy you can kind of build, you know, your team around a little bit. But you don't have Pearsall to throw to. Of course, you know, he's a San Francisco 49ers now, but with the Niners. But when you look at this, you know, you begin to kind of work through the details. You know, they have a really good offensive line, and they have a quarterback. Now, they don't have much depth behind him, but they have a quarterback. But they ought to be able to protect him. And, again, he's a guy that's been very efficient, you know, with using the check downs, taking what the defense gets him. But this running game's got to get going. This running game has to be a big part of things for them. I don't think there's any question about it, but when you get behind, you have opportunities, you know, to come back when you've got a guy like him. And so we talked about, you know, Trevor Etienne, you know, was like, hey, you know, he's going to be a star. And I believe that to be true, but he's going to do it at Georgia. Yeah, think about that. That burns a little bit there, right? One of your most dynamic playmakers is now playing for your rival. You know, in a year really where your coach's jobs are on the line, you know, and so you begin to kind of work through all that and you begin to think, hey, leading receiver's gone. You work through the, you know, the running game aspect of it. And then, you know, ATN's gone. Now, and Montrell Johnson's back. He's a senior, but and he's a guy that came with Billy Napier. And when Billy made the switch, he went with him. You know, and he was very productive at UL Lafayette, and he had a really good career, you know, a really good run at Florida. And so he's going to have to be the guy. You know, he's going to have to be a guy you build around. But, you know, what does he do now that he doesn't have to trade carries? That's a big part of it too. You know, it's like, hey, you had another running back of equal ability to kind of soak up some of the damage, and now he's gone. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, hey, can this team stay healthy, and can they find a way to get things done offensively? And that was the thing, like when Urban Meyer came, everybody's like, well, you know, I don't know if this offense is going to work in the SEC. I think maybe we're beginning to wonder that the Billy Napier offense is not going to work in the SEC. Maybe the linebackers are too fast. You know, maybe it's a scenario where that, you know, you just got different personnel here, and you know, the blocking schemes then and of themselves aren't sophisticated enough to cause chaos. You know, maybe that's an aspect of it too. But, yeah, again, you know, last year their secondary was terrible. And, you know, you begin to think about, you know, kind of what's next, you know, with this defense. And I don't know that you can really say. I don't know that anybody at this point can have a, you know, a really good idea of how this is going to break loose. You know, they add Elijah Badger from Arizona State. We talked about him the other day on our opponent preview. He was a leading receiver at Arizona State. Now he'll head to Florida. So we'll get to see him either way, but he'll be a Florida Gator. You lose one of your best cornerback prospects. You had a secondary that was bad. And then, you know, you have some guys that leave the program. Maybe that's a good thing. But you bring in Carmani McClain from Colorado and Asa Turner from Washington. So you feel like that's some guys with some Power 5 experience. You know, we should be able to be okay there. But you don't go out there and hit the portal hard unless you have a specific need. And that's the thing that this team has really struggled with. They have not been able to slow people down. And when you're a ball control offense and people can kind of score at will, all of a sudden it forces you to do some things that maybe you're not comfortable doing. That's one of those things I think about all the time with offenses like ours and offenses like the Air Raid, right? And so it's difficult to make us uncomfortable. If anything, it's, you know, when we get a big lead, you know, maybe we don't always know how to manage a clock well, you know. But I think with the fact that Levy's going to run the football more, we're going to have less problems with that. But, you know, this is a group, too, and we talked about, you know, transfer portal a little bit. They added 15 transfers, and a lot of those guys are pretty well recruited out of high school. I mean, they're not ranked as high, but the outgoing transfer stuff, they had 24 guys hit the portal, and not all those guys were scholarship guys, but most of them were, you know. And that's the thing you begin to break down too, is like, you know, you're having even guys leave to go play for your opponents. Of course, we talked about Jadarius Perkins going to Toledo, but you know, you got a guy going to Missouri here. Kamari Wilson, of course, makes a move over to Arizona State. We talked about that. And but, you know, Princely, Yuman Milan, I'm sure I pronounced that wrong. You know, he's an edge rusher, and now he's at Ole Miss. You know, and this is a guy that was a four-star transfer. We talked about ATN already. Will Norman is a guy that left and went to Marshall off the defensive line. Micah Mazuka, or Mezcua, he was a guy we were on a little bit. We didn't get him. He went to Nebraska. Scooby Williams, a linebacker, left and went to A&M. Jaden Hill, a corner, left and went to A&M. Manny Nunnery leaves and goes to Texas State. Linebacker Ethan Pouncey leaves and goes to Georgia Southern. And so some of those things you look at and say, you know, well, maybe we're better off. Maybe we misevaluated those guys. But, again, a lot of scholarship spots in the portal really committed to the secondary. So it's not like they hadn't tried to fix it. You get Jameer Grimsley coming in from Alabama. Obviously a guy that's recruited by Nick Saban's probably got a pretty good idea what football's about. Jason Zandamila coming in from USC, rated a 97, offensive lineman there, a guard. But when you run through all this stuff and you begin to kind of ask yourself, is this a program that is achieving the objectives of Florida football? And the answer to that is easy. It's no. And does Florida need to be a team that is this dependent on the portal? Now, I know it's a different day and time. And again, there's a lot of, you know, case studies out there to kind of decide what's the right number of guys. But when you're 3 years in and you're having to go out there and get nearly – you know, what is it, 17 players, 15 players? Yeah, you got to go and get 15 players, and maybe that's a good number for them. But you would think 3 years in, you have your guys, and you shouldn't be quite as reliant on the portal. You would think that. But I think when you look around the league, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to, you know, some teams are going to raise the average and others aren't. You know, we were in the middle of flipping our roster with a brand new coaching staff. So it makes sense that we'd have a lot of transfers. I don't know that that is sustainable at a place like Florida. And again, you think if you're Florida, in many respects, you ought to be like Alabama or Georgia. If a guy goes in the portal, you call up and say, hey, we're the Florida Gators, we like you. There's probably not a lot to think about. But I think Billy Napier, again, as we discussed at the beginning of this segment, the Gators have kind of lost their mystique. And so if you're choosing between Florida, Georgia, and Alabama, I think Florida's probably your third choice. And that's not a shot at Scott Strickland or the Florida Gators program. I think that's just the state of what they're in. And so if I had to call it today, I think Florida's in trouble coming in here. Now, I think it's probably an interesting game because I don't know what to expect of our defense. But it's a toss-up game in Starkville. And I think the psychology of it all, if State gets out to a 2-1 or hopefully a 3-0 start, I think Florida's in real trouble. Especially if Florida gets out to a 1-2 start, because the fans will be unmerciful. Especially if they drew, you lose that game to Miami and you lose that game to A&M, you got to go on the road. And they have not proven to be a great road team under Billy Napier. And those are things you kind of begin to think about too. You know, is you know what's reasonable for this season for the Florida Gators? Do you think 7-5 gets him back? I don't think it does. I think Scott Strickland would tag it the same. You know, the expectations and the standards of Florida football are not being met. And again, you know, if you're a Scooter, Scott Strickland, you know, you went out and you got your guy and you paid handsomely to get him. But he's not performing. And again, just kind of looking, let's go through the math together. You know, road games in the SEC. And I guess we could even do them all. But, the first road game of the Billy Napier era went to Tennessee. That's a loss. They had a ton of home games. And then you go play on a neutral field against Georgia. We're going to count that. Even though it's a neutral field, it's away from Ben Hill Griffin. So that's you're 0-2. They get the dub at Texas A&M. That's big. Makes them 1-2 on the road. And then, of course, you beat Vanderbilt. So now they evens you up. Then you lose at Florida State. So you're 2-3, lose the ball game. 2-4 in games away from Ben Hill Griffin. Flipping over to last year, again, we're 2-4 heading into the year. You lose at Utah, right? So now you're 2-5. You have a nice little home stretch. You go to Kentucky. You get beat there. You're 2-6. You get that dub in Columbia, South Carolina. You're 3-6. You lose in the neutral side game against Georgia. You're 3-7. Lose at Baton Rouge. You're 3-8. Lose at Columbia, Missouri. You're 3-9. And so they have not been a great road team. And, again, you got to factor in the Vanderbilt deal. And, then again, South Carolina was pretty decent when they beat them 2 years ago. But, I mean, does the Vanderbilt game even really count? This is not a good road team. And the SEC is a very unforgiving place to play on the road. And so, yeah, picking it today, and I may feel differently on game week, picking it today, I'm picking the Bulldogs. All right, final segment of the day brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. If you're bringing a large group of folks to town, whether it be a ball game weekend, a work situation, or maybe a retreat, maybe a Friendsgiving, I don't know what your needs are. But look no further than the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. They can accommodate you and several guests. 5 bedrooms, 2 baths, that great back porch area. Plenty of room for everybody to just kind of sit and recreate and enjoy an adult beverage or perhaps perhaps some food. You know, full service kitchen there too. So you can run to one of the local grocers and stock up and everybody can take turns cooking. Live high on the hog. Make it a big deal, right? Wet bar there as well. So plenty of ways for you to entertain your guests. Very nice big living room area too where everybody can kind of spread out, kind of enjoy just being together. Maybe you've thought about that and say, you know what, one day we ought to get everybody together, get our college friends together, get our couples friends together, maybe make it a couples weekend. Be a great opportunity for you to do so. Now, when you Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, their Facebook page will come up. It is the old renovated country club clubhouse. And it is as nice as you would imagine, right? And it's a great place for you to go and just kind of enjoy friends and family. But you can see all the amenities that are available to you on their Facebook page. Now, when you're done reviewing all that, hit the back button on your browser. you're going to have some booking options. You can go Airbnb, you can go VRBO. However, if you want to save some money on that stay, I can help you with that. Book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10, get 10% off your stay. So beautiful Steve Robertson saving you 10% on your stay at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And you need to act quickly. You know, summer's running out. Of course, the holidays are coming up, so maybe a Christmas in Starkville is in the cards. I don't know what you've got planned, but I know where you can do it all at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right, I shared yesterday the rough copy of the book jacket for the forthcoming biography on Duty Noble, The Dude, The Life and Times of Duty Noble. A couple of mistakes here and there. We got all that stuff cleaned up. But I'm the kind of person, even if it's not quite finished, I want to get it out to you soon. A few things on there, you know, indentation there, you know, take out an apostrophe there, and then we got to get that spine right with the maroon instead of black lettering. So all that'll be taken care of. But I like to get that stuff out just because of the fact there's so many things out there that, you know, I just want to keep people apprised of what's happening. And I am so excited for you guys to read this book. Of course, I've read it several times. I wrote it. And then I've gone back and read all the edits and changes and things like that, made some more changes, and then now we've got the book proofs back. And so all that stuff now, getting ready to head off. So it will be a September release at the earliest. And we were hoping for late August, early September. We'll get an official release date soon. But it takes about 6 weeks, give or take. And so the chances of being an August release are not very good. But it's going to be worth the wait. Everywhere I go, people are asking about the book. And if you hadn't ordered yet, you can pre-order it at dutynoblebook.com. All books ordered through the website will be signed. So you don't have to come chase me down, or maybe perhaps you live in the mission field, you know, somewhere like, you know, Tennessee. And you don't have to come chase me to book signing to get the book signed. So you'll have that for whatever that's worth. The thing I'm most excited about, too, is just, you know, honoring the families. Right, there are a lot of families out there. Maybe your grandfather played at Mississippi State under Duty Noble. There's a good chance that maybe he's mentioned. Perhaps your grandfather was involved in, you know, in the ousting of Alan McKean. Well, you know what? Good chance your grandfather's mentioned. Yeah, I mean, this is not just a book about rainbows and unicorn farts. I mean, there is some controversy in this book, and it kind of shines a light on some dark times in Mississippi State's history. A lot of them are not of our making. You know, we talk about the Bilbo Purge. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. Theodore Bilbo was a governor of ours. I've touched on it a little bit in Alpha Dogs. And you know the story of Billy Chadwick I've shared with you here on the show before. But the Bilbo Purge was one of these wild times in Mississippi history. In 1930, the governor of Mississippi at the time was basically pushing the state legislature to appoint somebody as to kind of oversee the state college board, have a director. And apparently they weren't moving fast enough for him, so he says, well, I'll just show them. And he fired our university president, the Ole Miss University president, as well as the president of the W, with one stroke of the pen. And the cuts were very, very deep, terminated multiple faculty members at all three institutions. Of course, Billy Chadwick's caught up in all that too. There's some coaches and things of that nature. It was nuts. And then, you know, a state college board was kind of put together. And then, you know, Duke Humphrey and President Kritz and all these kinds of people, they had to kind of deal with the state college board. So even if they wanted something done, they'd have to go make their case. And so hiring coaches became a real difficult task, especially for Mississippi State, because we didn't have the budget that some of our conference members did. And then you had somebody else kind of controlling the purse strings. And eventually, there was a little more autonomy granted to the universities, which led to the hiring of Alan McKean. Yeah, think about that for a second. I mean, you know, it's so crazy when you think about, you know, Spike Nelson. You know, he was an up-and-coming name, and, you know, we hired him. But also there were a lot of things, that, you know, budgetary issues that were involved in some of these decisions. And, of course, they tried to go out and hype them up as best they could. But we struggled, you know. And it was really, to kind of tip you off a little bit, you know, Duty Noble was really good friends with General Bob Nealon at Tennessee. And when he got ready to hire a coach, he went and visited with General Nealon. And asked for some names. And, Bobby Dodd was a very, very hot name. He was kind of like the old Jimbo Fisher, right? Who was going to hire Jimbo, right? Bobby Dodd was like that at Georgia Tech. And every time that there was a big opening in the Southeastern Conference, everybody pursued Bobby Dodd, including Duty Noble. And obviously we didn't get him, but it's important to kind of understand how all of that worked together. And what's interesting about that is Alan McKean wasn't our first choice. We thought we had a deal in place. We had a coach that had won multiple national championships that had agreed to in principle to be your head football coach. And some things didn't work out legally. And as a result, we didn't hire him and then hired Alan McKean. So it was kind of one of those things that was, you know, kind of a mysterious happenstance. And not to say that the other guy, if we had hired him, wouldn't have done well here at Mississippi State, but we found out we could win here. And then after the very shameful ousting of Alan McKean, we had some donors that became emboldened and basically wanted to run the university and in many respects kind of ran it in the ground. And then all of a sudden, you know, when coaches came, they wouldn't stay. They'd come, they'd take the job, they'd get here and understand they didn't have the financial resources. And in many respects, we kind of had a toxic, booster culture in some respects. And you're going to read about that in great detail. I do want to give some flowers to some an old alumni, a chapter that we talk about being true maroon. And probably the one chapter to me that really stood out in my research for this book was the Lowndes County chapter of the Mississippi State Alumni Association. And for those of you that have come up and been a part of that organization, I think you'd be very proud to call yourself a member because of the fact when you look back at life and times at Mississippi State, the Lowndes County chapter has found itself on the right side of history. Just about every time there was some level of controversy, there was something going on that was maybe shameful to the university, every single time it was the Lowndes County chapter that really tried to lead in a very positive direction. And when there was all these warring between alumni chapters and everybody wanted everybody fired and it didn't matter what happened and who was involved, the Lowndes County chapter kind of reached out and said, hey, I think all this is shameful and harmful to our university. And in times they stood alone. But to those men and women that were a part of that, I want to say thank you. And when you read this book, I think you're going to look back and say, you know what? That makes me really proud. And that was one of my objectives in all this, not specifically for Lowndes County, but just I wanted everybody to get credit for what they did. And I think that's something that when you read in great detail, you know, the end of the Alan McKean era and ultimately the end of the Duty Noble era, there are going to be some chapters in there that may make you a little bit uncomfortable, make you a little bit angry. Because we had some people that were within our fan base and within our family and people that, you know, I think their intentions were good. They were just a little bit misguided at times. And that we deal with some of that now, you know, even to this day. It's just human nature. When we all want the same things, we just don't always agree on how to get there. My hope is that we never, ever are in a situation where that happens again. And a lot of it's because, you know, back in the 40s and 50s, there were no TV deals. There were no ESPN deals. There were only a handful of bowls. And so you didn't have an opportunity to go out there and kind of add to the coffers. And so you were very reliant on the donors. And if you've read Alpha Dogs, I interviewed Harper Davis, God rest his soul, right in the middle of COVID. And he had left his home there in central Mississippi and went and stayed with his son. Harper Davis was still driving, going to church and that sort of stuff. And with all the things that were going on, he just really needed to be with family, and he was. But if you've read that, then you understand, too, that the way the whole thing worked out with Alan McKean, you know, he lost some prominent donors first. And then he lost a lot of the rank-and-file fans, and then ultimately, in the end, some of the cronies that were kind of pushing for his ouster even convinced the student body to sign a petition saying they would boycott games if Alan McKean was brought back. You can say, you know what, it's easy to be a prisoner of the moment, but you know, Alan McKean never had a losing season at Mississippi State. And we ran him off. And it was people within our fan base that thought that they knew better than Duty Noble and Coach Mitchell and President Fred Tom Mitchell. We thought we knew better. We thought, hey, you know what? These guys are our president and AD, but I've got no confidence in him, so let me get out of here and I'll just create a fuss to get what I want. Well, you got what you wanted, and then it didn't work out. And then rather than look in the mirror and say, you know what, maybe we should stay out of this, they doubled down and really put our university through something very, very shameful. And again, you're going to read about it in great detail. And again, if you hadn't done so, go to dutynoblebook.com. You can pre-order. Again, you know, a few weeks away, but it's been a labor of love, and I think it's the greatest gift I could ever give to the Mississippi State family. I really do. But it's not just some rah-rah book and let's all just celebrate Duty Noble. I mean, there's some very dark times that he had to help us navigate through. But we had some fans. We had some very prominent fans at times that ended up on the wrong side of history. And so if it was your loved one or your grandfather or great-grandfather, they're probably named in the book too. So I just want to prepare you for that. There are a lot of people going to read that and say, hey, it's so great to read about all these great games. But when you get towards the end of the book, you're going to read about some things that I think are going to upset you. I do. The way that things were handled administratively, within fan base, within state government, there's a lot of things out there that towards the end of Duty Noble's tenure that you're going to read about, and you're going to be thinking, you know what, Steve, I never knew that. And I've spoken with multiple faculty members here in recent days, and they've asked questions about the book, and like, hey, I never knew that. You know, well, me either. That's why it's important to write books like this. It's important for us to remember the past so we don't repeat it. True. Listen, for those of you that came floated this weekend, you know, I ran the spa Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That's one of the reasons I recorded the show Thursday night, so you would have that on Friday. Didn't write anything the rest of the weekend and kind of enjoyed kind of being away from it for a little while because it's going to be nose to grindstone, you know, basically from now through the December signing period. Again, we have our first media opportunities for football this week. And but yeah, I think so many people that came by and floated, and if you are a person that suffers with chronic anxiety or depression or you have aches and pains, we may be able to help you. We've got a lot of regulars. We've got some people that come twice a week, others that come weekly, some that come once a month, twice a month. Maybe that's something that would help you. I've got a lot of people that say, you know what, Steve, I'm just not sure what to think. I maybe get claustrophobic. Well, if that's the case, then you just leave the pod doors open. What's dark in there? Well, there's a light that's within your control. You know, you can leave it open. And, pods are all cleaned after everyone, filtered. And it's just, it's a great thing. It's been a game changer for me with my anxiety. I'm able to navigate life with a lot more patience these days because I float regularly. And maybe that can benefit you. And had a gentleman, I won't mention the name, had a gentleman this week that floated for the very first time, and he came as a favor to his wife and daughter. He really wanted his daughter to come. But they all went together as a group, and all of them loved it. And I remember when he came in, he had this look on his face like he was kind of skeptical. And when he got done, he looked a different person. And he goes, you know, he said, I've had this problem with my shoulder for years, and I'm not even feeling it right now. He goes, and I turned my back the other day, kind of pulled a muscle in my back working in the yard, and I don't even feel that now. So even if it's just some temporary relief for you, that we think that this may be an opportunity for you. So call 662-268-7601 or just go online at truerest.com. Follow us on social media at True Rest of Starkville. You can download the True Rest app and book online too. And that's a nice thing too. You're in charge of it. You don't have to speak to anybody. But if you have questions, my lovely wife Dana, there to answer them for you. You can hit her up on social media or 662-268-7601. But I'm going to go float either tonight or tomorrow. Maybe I'll see you there. Trying to get in there once a week again now that I'm done writing a book. I floated extensively during the research part of it because it is so labor intensive and I needed to kind of get a mental reset. And I do think that increased cognitive function really helped in my research for the book. And I think the book is a better book as a result of those efforts. So maybe you're a creative person and said, you know what, Steve, maybe it's not for me. Maybe it's not, but you owe it to yourself to at least try it. So come be a part of that. At True Rest. Let's get out of here. Next time we get together, we'll be talking football. And by that time, too, we'll know exactly what Dave Marchand and probably Travis Smith's going to do. So we look forward to being with you then. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Thank you for coming. calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.